Snacks for the Brain. Hey there, y'all, and welcome to episode number 57 of Snacks for the Brain. I am extraordinarily pleased to share with you the 20 minutes or so I spent with the director of the Vanderbilt Center for Matrix Biology, Dr. Billy Hudson. Dr. Hudson is a very busy man. That's why I was so embarrassed when Amanda called me from my non-office. I don't have a desk there, much less an office. I usually use the tiny conference room for any work I do physically at the CSO office. Anyway, Amanda called to say that he was there in the office for the interview that we scheduled. Me? I was sitting in his office at B3102, Vanderbilt Medical Center North, wondering why he wasn't there. Remind me to tell you about finding his office in the first place some other time. Anyway, I power walked through the labyrinthine corridors to the CSO offices in Light Hall, only to find that another meeting had been scheduled in that conference room. So, punting, I suggested coffee in the Vanderbilt University Medical Center cafeteria. I've interviewed folks at Panera, Fido, and other places, but never there, so I'm hoping the audio is as good as the interview. Over my French roast coffee and Dr. H's decaf, we chatted for a bit about his research, his career beginnings, and his outreach project, Aspirnauts, that's A-S-P-I-R-N-A-U-T-S, through which he is working with 4th through 12th graders in his very, very rural hometown in Arkansas. After our chat continued, I asked him what kind of music he likes, and it turns out he doesn't get much time to listen to music, I can see that. But his wife, being a classical musician, that's some of his favorite style. He grew up listening to country music, so here I'm splitting the difference. The show opens with this nice classical piece from Magnatune.com, James Edwards playing classical guitar. You'll have to see the show notes for the name. I will not even attempt to pronounce it. It's Franche. And it's going to close with a country song from the Podcast Music Network that I haven't found yet, but I'll tag one when I do. Listen up!
You're listening to Snacks for the Brain.
Ah, this is so very cool. Wonderful.
We're here with Billy Hudson, who is a professor in the Center for Matrix Biology. And you're the director of that center?
Yeah, I'm the director of it.
And you have your fingers in a whole lot of pies. We'd like to talk about some of those today.
Okay, I look forward to it. Yeah, I've been at Vanderbilt for 5 years. I have set up the Center for Matrix Biology, and it's we have like about 50 members of the center. That's many different departments in Vanderbilt, all focused on, you know, the environment of cells. We have a major research program in diabetes and as well as cancer. There's some aspect of both of those in the exercise of the matrix. So excited about, you know, the work we're doing here and the people we work with at Vanderbilt.
There's a lot going on over there. It's like a city here. I know that, but by mistake, I went over to your office this morning, and every time I go over there, I get lost amidst the labyrinth of corridors. And every time I peek inside a door, there's somebody working seriously.
Yeah, Vanderbilt is a major research university in the United States, so it's a wonderful atmosphere and environment to work in. So we're able to do a lot of research, but I also have this Aspirnaut project that I know you're aware of.
Yeah, I want to talk about that too. Let me ask you one thing about your research. I went to your Vita, I never know how to pronounce that, I read it online. And
that's Vita, silly.
Mention of your research focus. It's difficult for me to understand in layman's terms, and I'm sure you've had to explain it that way a couple of times. Can you throw that out at us?
Well, it's once again, it has to do with the extracellular matrix. So cells throughout the body have an environment that they operate in, a form of tissue. And they sit on a substance called extracellular matrix. You might look like an analogy would be carpet. So that the chairs and tables are sitting on the carpet, and we're standing on the carpet now. So that carpet, if you will, the extracellular matrix, plays a role in separating cells, making tissue, so it forms compartments. It also provides strength to tie cells together. It also influences what cells do. So it's passing information back to the nucleus of the cell. So it's an active part of the tissue.
So that's your focus, is that matrix.
And then I have a specific focus on an interest in diabetes, because the diabetics have matrix problems. Mm-hmm. And that gives rise to kidney failure and loss of eyesight. So I have a major interest in trying to figure out how the defects in a patient with diabetes, how it causes kidney failure and loss of eyesight. And so we're making some progress through the years. I've been working on it maybe 30 years, understanding parts of that. And we do have a drug candidate that we have put together over the last 10 years that all indications in animals and in humans, it slows the progression toward the end-stage kidney disease.
Well,
so it's now been approved by the FDA for fast-track status, and we're trying to now get the funds together and to do a phase 3 clinical trial.
Well,
so it's pretty exciting. It's based on 30 years of working in the lab, trying to figure out what the defect, underlying problems are in the diabetic.
So that fast track status is a fairly recent development.
Yeah, and we've had it for a couple of years, mm-hmm. but the challenge
fast track in the FDA is probably not all that fast, right?
No, what the challenge is getting the resources to do the clinical trials. I mean, it depends. It will take another $30 to $80 million.
Wow.
So you got to acquire the capital to do that. And we're looking at some things now to do that.
So Bill Gates, you hear that? Okay.
Yeah, right.
Give Billy Hudson a call.
That's right. We need that. Well, it's a pandemic with the diabetes, mm-hmm. right?
And so it's a shame with all the money that's going into fairly useless things in the world that something this useful has to struggle for funding.
Yeah, well, everyone thinks they got something useful, you see. That's the challenge.
Mm-hmm.
So I may think I have something, someone else says, well, I'm not sure.
Well, that's true.
And so we march forward trying to acquire the right evidence to support our claims.
Let me ask you, how did your interest in diabetes research come about? Is something that's in your family?
It goes back more than 30 years now. I was in the Army during the Vietnam War, and I was assigned to Boston, where I was working on, just by somebody saying, here's a project, I began to work on membranes for dialysis machines. So you go back to the 60s, dialysis just coming into play,
mm-hmm.
and they needed better membranes for those devices. So I was working on dialysis membranes.
Wow.
And I went to a seminar in Boston and heard Robert Spiro, who was professor of biological chemistry at Harvard, speak on the kidney membrane, the authentic membrane, and how it was defective in the diabetic. So ultimately I would go to work with him and I would get introduced to diabetic kidney disease and the physiology of it and the biochemistry, and so I've been working on now more than 30 years.
What an interesting path.
Yeah.
I like to ask about those because I'm hoping that my podcast will remain as a lasting resource for teachers and students. It's interesting, I think, to students to know how people come about their passions.
I think it's an important aspect of developing young students to find a passion, and so you have to just be exposed. It has something to do with
mm-hmm.
being exposed to, it's like going to a buffet, you've got to go out there where things are, and you'll find something.
Yeah, if you'd never been doing research on membranes for dialysis machines.
I would. I'd have taken another path, you see. Maybe it's been a better path, you see.
Maybe.
You only know one path, and you do the best you can with that one path.
Right.
So I've been very happy with it because I don't have any family members with diabetes, mm-hmm. but I've come to know that it is one of the major health problems in the world today.
You're making a difference.
I hope that
those clinical trials come through for you.
Well, even if they don't, you see, we're understanding exactly what goes wrong with the diabetic.
Mm-hmm.
You got to understand what goes right and what goes wrong in order to develop a drug.
And that's one thing that I try to teach my little kids. I teach 350 kids a week in my lab, all the classes in lower school come through. And I always try to share with them how many people it takes to get something important done and how important collaboration and working with other people is. How many people are on your team there at the center?
Well, in my research lab, I have 10 people. I've had as many as 20, but I have 10 now. They're more senior people, and I like it very much. It is a time of collaboration, but I also say that there's no substitute for a single idea coming from a single person. So there's still cornerstones to this advances.
I'll be quoting that. That's an important statement
for original thought.
So you're trying to foster original thought and give opportunities to people in your original hometown, is that right?
Yes, I grew up in Arkansas in what you might say the backwoods, very, very remote region of the state. And at this day, students travel on a bus an hour and a half to school each way, so they spend 3 hours on the bus. So that turns out to be something typical of rural communities, at least an hour on the bus each way.
Well, and even these days with the busing that's going on still, people don't have neighborhood schools in many parts of the country, and urban kids spend a lot of time on the bus, don't they?
Yes, they do. Society has put some programs out there for urban individual students, which is a good thing. But when you look at the rural areas, you don't find much. And so I'm targeting my effort toward rural poverty areas in the United States.
Well, it looks like, from what I've seen about it, that this is a model that might be applied in many places.
Well, we think it could be. I hope it would be. But it's like any experiment you do. You want to do it in a very controlled way and evaluate it and look at it before you try to replicate it.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're focused on an area of Arkansas that I know, and I know the families, and I know the school situation. So we've decided to put some effort on a group of 15 kids. There are 15 students that are in grades 4 through 11. So the idea is what can be done on a school bus? I've ridden a school bus several times now, and I know that it's an academic wasteland. There's nothing happening on the bus. Kids are bored, and it is very difficult to ride. I mean, adults wouldn't do it.
It's amazing what we ask little kids
it's
to
uncomfortable.
Do. Hey, come sit in, even in school, come sit in a row and be quiet.
Yeah. Well, how about riding in a tin can for an hour and a half each way and with no bathroom, no food?
3 hours of their lives every day of the week.
That's right. That's 15 hours a week. So let's say it's 3 hours on the bus. They're at school only about six.
And the instructional time of that?
About six. I'd say they're there longer, but about instructional time. So we have, with the technology we have today, we know that one can turn that experience into positive.
Mm-hmm.
So we put 15 laptop computers on a bus that are connected to internet. Technology just came available in last year to have in-motion internet.
Yeah, it's amazing how much you can do this day that you couldn't do even a year ago.
That's right. So we have 15 kids with laptops. They have been selected. They're the high-ability kids. And we have another 25 kids with the video iPods.
Very nice.
Everybody on that bus has a learning device, a modern-day kind. So we're excited about it. And we've just done a two-month experiment for feasibility. We know it's going to work. Kids are excited. And now they're begging for content. The content is really not out there for the iPods,
right?
For science and math is what we want to emphasize.
Well, I can help you with some of that content. There's some stuff out there that you may not be aware of. The podcast, for example, they don't have to be watching, they can be listening.
Yeah.
And a lot of podcasts are video podcasts now. So they
Well, be certainly happy to get any of that information. And we're looking to put the laptop students online with advanced placement courses.
Very nice. So en route and to yes. school and home, they can be working on a class.
That's right. That's right. We also have a what I call a one-room schoolhouse back in the community where they meet twice a week for an hour and a half, and they will be going over their, you know, their what they're doing on the bus and any problem areas and their evaluation. So that I saw that the bus was a one-room schoolhouse.
Mm-hmm.
You got kids of all ages, and you could have an older student in there, kind of look over them a little bit, and so it's a one-room schoolhouse environment. And now with the technology, you can have individualized learning. So it should be focused on the particular child.
Right.
So that's the experiment we got going.
That sounds awesome. I'd love to go down and take a look at that when
yeah,
the school year starts.
Yeah.
That would be fun. Did I overhear that you're traveling down soon?
Yeah, I'm going to go either the 26th of June. We're going to have 2 days there, 26th and 27th June, or one of those 2 days.
Mm-hmm.
We're going down, and I'm going to take my research, a couple of my researchers down, and we're going to do get them involved with some research that we do in my lab.
Great.
We want to somehow introduce them to biomedical research of the real world. I'm going to talk about diabetes and cancer. I'm sure they got friends that has those diseases.
Oh,
and so
everybody.
I think that you can go ahead and speak to the big issues.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have to know the details. I mean, it takes 20 years to get the details. But you can understand parts of it and get motivated and then participate in some way in that project. And I'm hoping that what this does, it exposes them so that certain ones will get motivated.
Mm-hmm. Well, we certainly need that in this country, by all indications and by all reports.
Well, I think what I am sensing that there's a need for universities, particularly research people, to spend a little of their time helping with K-12 education.
That's why you and Ginny are so
that's
such
right,
good friends.
That's right. You need to have the teachers and the professors need to find a way of interacting to raise the standards of K-12 education. The teachers are asking for it. They're frustrated with it, but they need knowledge, and students need knowledge of the university.
Mm-hmm.
It shouldn't be so isolated. So I'm for that concept. Of course, Jenny has set that up as an umbrella some years ago with the Center for Science Outreach.
Yep.
Mine just happened to be a specific project that targets rural America.
It's really an admirable dedication that you're bringing to it, and can't help but enrich the lives of those kids you're touching.
Well, my experience says that all of us had mentors along the way. It could be your parent, it could be a teacher, it could be a community person, or your physician, who knows. But
there is
a path, and the path has to be aligned by mentors, and I think we can go ahead and sort of set a path and start lining it up. Rather than being totally by chance, we can play a role in setting up a path.
That's a wonderful place to end this little interview with Billy Hudson. It's been great talking with you today, and I look forward to following the progress of your Astronauts project.
Thank you very much. I look forward to getting some information from you as well on the podcast.
I will share.
Snacks for the Brain is brought to you by the fine folks at the Vanderbilt Center for Science Outreach, connecting working research scientists with K-12 students worldwide.
Check out the website at scienceoutreach.org.
Hey, let's kick it out of here with a song by me from my CD, Scott Merrick's Songs for Alaska, featuring the Last Frontier Band. Billy said he liked country music, and this is sort of country. It's folk, but I think he'll like it anyway. It's called Full Tilt Tomorrow. See ya!
We met in a bar, if I could have seen far to the future, I would have just walked right on out. But as long as we're here, let's drink just one more beer. Define the world's problems and talk them all out. He's got him a lady, but he needs a few more.
And he gets them wherever he can.
He's got mixed up emotions and a few crazy notions about how it should be when a man. man is a man.
So laugh with me, friends. It ain't gonna end. We'll keep on rolling till the night is the morning. Then we'll get us some sleep so our bodies can keep running full tilt tomorrow when it's nighttime again. Driftwood collector, a vibration inspector. He'll check yours for you if he gets half a chance. Well, I've known him a while, and I still have to smile when he walks in the room and the room starts to dance. So laugh with me, friends. It ain't gonna end. We'll keep on rolling till the night is the morning. Then we'll get us some sleep so our bodies can keep running full tilt tomorrow when it's nighttime again. I said full tilt tomorrow when it's nighttime again.
Full tilt tomorrow
when it's nighttime again.
That's it for episode 57 of
Snack for Upgrade!
Thank you for downloading. Check out the show notes at
blogs.vanderbilt.edu/s4b.
Keep them in my heart.